across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Happy Friday. Welcome to Memorial Day weekend. We made it 6:06 on this Friday morning, May 24th, 2024. And it's another beautiful day to have you here up north on Lake Wissota, live from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, the Civic Media app, through our social media video feeds, or by podcast. Nice to have you along. Got a question. What are you planning? And I'm hoping that what you're planning doesn't depend on a day being as warm and gorgeous as yesterday, because that was sadly the weather highlight heading into the weekend. Brittany Merlot will tell us more about it coming up in a little bit. You can call or text us during the show at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. You can also use the Civic Media app to give us a ring or to send us a text as well. It's Friday. It's Memorial Day weekend. Whatever the temperature, it is the unofficial kickoff of summer. So a little later on, we're getting back to the yacht rock, because that's what summer is all about. And we need to take a break, you know, like the little river band and cool change. We need to, you know, just get out and clear our heads from the decidedly not cool headlines, like U.S. Supreme Court justices who decided not only to protect a racially gerrymandered political map, but even trashed Brown versus Board of Education in the process. That criticism, by the way, coming from Clarence Thomas. Also, Kia Vakil has details on how the Biden administration is fighting monopoly practices being engaged in by Ticketmaster and also by big oil companies. So a little good news to share with you today as well. And that's because, like I said, along with some of the not cool stories like out of the U.S. Supreme Court, you also have the whole notion that a significant swath of the American public thinks that despite us now being in the strongest economy on the planet, and numbers not seen in years, many Americans who say their own finances are good also believe that there either is a recession going on now or one that is at hand, even though it's not, and it's not. There's nothing that indicates that, but it tells you about the power of a steady diet of negative news from people who have a role in trying to get you to doubt things, doubt the economy, doubt the election results, doubt the effectiveness of a vaccine. And it's working. We'll talk to Mark Jacob about that. We'll talk to former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about the Trump trial closing arguments and the hush money trial begin next Tuesday. Dan Schumacher will be here to talk about sports, our favorite little Cubs fan, getting all excited for the Cubs-Brewers series that begins at American Family Field on Monday, or as he refers to it, you know, Wrigley North, unfortunately. But that's, you know, it is what it is. Let's see. Greg Bach is in Waukesha as well. There's a button here that I pushed to bring him in. There he is now. Good morning, Mr. Bach. Welcome to Friday.
Hello from beautiful downtown Waukesha, where I sit here in a former dentist's office, loving life, loving the weather, and I dislike Dan Schumacher every time he talks about the Cubs.
Okay. Dan Schumacher will be here to talk to Greg Bach about the Grateful Dead. How's that? Is that better?
I love Dan Schumacher. What a good person. He's a man who'd let take care of my mother if she was sick.
Hey, I've got news here. This is fun.
Are you pulling out your paper schedule?
No. I've lost that. Oh. There's so many papers here. First off, I want to say thanks to the folks at St. Isidore's Dairy, who it's a very small cheesemaker located in Osseo, just south of Eau Claire. And we had done a story recently about their small batch cheddar, winning a national award. And so they sent a box of that to me yesterday. Nice little box of three wedges of their cheddar, which is really nice. And I got a nice little thank you note here from Inga and everybody there at St. Isidore's. Put the cow on this side. There's a little Jersey cows for Greg to see where they get the cheese from.
I'm a Jersey cow. Yeah, get in my face. I'm making cheese here.
From Sage Weil, the founder of Civic Media, I got my T-shirt.
Nice.
For the camera there we go. So we got your Tune Into the Community T-shirt that you can get. You know what? There's probably, if I go through all the Luke Mathers notes, there's probably a promo someplace I could read about that. Let me find it.
Head over to civicmedia.us and click on the store tab at the top of the page, and you can find your own Civic Media merch, including T-shirts and a lovely hat.
Okay, you got to the promo before me. Thank you very much for getting that done.
I'm knocking things out for you, buddy. It's Friday. It's beginning of the weekend. I want you to get in that hammock and hammock it up.
I'm noticing that on my promo page here, I've got the promo for the smart speakers, for the news digest by email, for the music stations, and then the fraction of a second where I was like, I don't have the merch promo. You start reading the merch promo. It's the symbiosis here is a mess.
It's so good.
Back to Dan and the Cubs and the Brewers. Again, they opened that series on Monday. The Brewers were off yesterday, and now they're in Boston to take on the Red Sox for the weekend. I used to have a better Boston accent. I haven't used
it. Yeah, we're going to Boston to see the Brewers get beaten by the Red Sox, because Sox forever, baby. Yankees suck.
Yes. Let's see. So we're going to get in the hammock. I mowed the lawn yesterday. It did not take 11 passes this time to get rid of all the grass clippings. It only took about 2.5.
Nice.
So I'm very, very happy about that. And we've got one of the daughters is coming out, bringing the 2-year-old and the 5-year-old. So that's going to be great.
Right.
I was a little worried yesterday because I mentioned a couple of older trees came down in a thunderstorm the other day. Mm-hmm. I thought, we're not going to go near them, but what if the kids accidentally, what if they got too close? What if whatever? So we had called a tree company. We use one up here called Tree Savvy. We've used them for several different things. And they showed up yesterday, like out of thin air. I thought we were way down on the list. Apparently being a loyal customer has its advantages. They showed up and they cleaned up these three trees in no time. And it just, every time that happens, I'm like, yeah, I have to write a check out. But then Sherry and I kind of look and go, do you know how long it would have taken us with the chainsaw and cutting it up and splitting it and stacking it, waiting 2 years for it to dry enough to use it in the fire pit? And we're just like, no, you get to a certain age when you're younger, it's like, I will do that. This is what men do. It's like, no, or this is what homeowners do. And now you know what homeowners approaching their 60s too, they use their phone and their checkbook, and they go, okay, fine. You win, commerce. You win, experts who actually have skills. Because in one case,
with all his fingers. So
thank you. Yes, I appreciate that too. See, in one case, they had the way the tree had been hit is it. Not that it was necessarily going to hit another tree and take it down, but it could have.
Yeah.
And so the way that they, put a rope around the one tree and then put the rope around another tree, tie the end of the rope to like a backhoe, and then slowly using the tension on the rope, pulled the tree down. And, they cut it.
Yeah.
But then instead of letting it fall, they gently guided it to the ground.
Oh.
And I'm like, that never would have happened with me. No matter how careful you would have been. It would, I've watched enough cartoons. I know how gravity works. Gravity works the way you don't want it to work in a given situation.
What are you doing this weekend? I'm looking for a new house.
we did talk about that. We've got neighbors doing remodeling on theirs, and we've talked to one particular poplar, which is getting to be very tall and more a threat to their house than ours. But either way, it's going to sting if it comes down.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, as long as it falls on the garage, it's okay. Because that's the thing that they're going to do next for remodeling. I'm like, okay, well, I won't tell your insurance agent that there's going to be a nasty beaver accident up here real soon. But,
That's funny.
It was nice. It was nice to get that out of the way and, you know, head into the weekend on a nice note, because yeah, we really need that. And are you going to get a chance to relax at all?
Oh, Pat, yes, I will. Because this time.
Okay.
This time tomorrow. Now, granted, this is not the relaxing part, but this time tomorrow, I hopefully will be sitting at Mitchell International Airport, because I'm going to head to Washington, D.C., where, by the way, it is like going to be in the mid 80s all the time we're there. We're there until Tuesday.
Sultry, yes.
Yeah, and nothing like a D.C. mid 80s, which has that nice hint of swamp to it.
Oh, it's way more than a hint.
Yeah.
I know you've been before to National Stadium. Are you going to take in a Nationals game while you're out there?
I've never been to one. So we are going to a game, I believe, on Sunday.
Who had? Was it Luke? So, because I've been there a few times, and I think it was Luke,
because when I mentioned, when we were talking yesterday, I mentioned National Stadium, and he's like, I love that place. And you said it too. So,
yes.
Yeah, so we're going to go.
It's so nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I love going to baseball games where I have no stake, where I don't care who wins. I can just wear my Brewers hat, sit back, drink a $48 beer.
And, oh, so you're a White Sox fan. Okay.
Hey-o! Better. Yeah, they're taking on the Mariners too. So it's like, what do I care?
Oh, you have no stake in the game. Just enjoy. You get to just enjoy. Yeah. I recall being in DC for business at one point when the Nationals were in the playoffs, and it wasn't 2019, the year they won the World Series. They must have been in the playoffs a year or two prior to that. And I was able to you know, score a ticket, you know, that same day. And to be I've never been at a playoff baseball game where, again, you didn't have a stake in the outcome.
Yeah.
And you could just enjoy watching all the fans enjoy the game as much as they do. And that part's really nice, but it raises this question. Now, we know that, you know, for the four games against the Cubs starting Monday, there will be all kinds of obnoxious Cubs fans at American Family Field. The question is, are there any White Sox fans left because they've been so bad for so long? Will you get the same kind of crowd?
No.
For a White Sox series for the three games that follow that next weekend?
Yeah, I think there will be a nice little smattering of people, but I'll tell you this much, man, the connection that Brewers and White Sox fans have together in our absolute hatred of the Cubs, I feel like it's just be three-game scrimmage. Just we're having fun. We're kicking back. No big deal. And everyone's gone back to their houses in the suburbs of Chicago because they're too afraid to go to Chicago.
Well, and we're all going to be tired anyway after four games of booing Craig Counsell. Justifiably, I might add.
Yeah.
Hey, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Friday morning, heading into the holiday weekend, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Is. That's what we needed. A little yacht rock.
If there's one thing. Hey, Pat, I made margaritas. We got room on the boat?
Not now. I'm watching the albatross and the whales. They are my brother.
I'm looking at this Little River Band album cover.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like a creature I'm looking at? Folks, Google it. Look up Little River Band First Under the Wire, and I think it's like a mole or something. I have no idea. These bands are weird. You listen to weird bands.
I was gonna say it was the 70s. What can I say? We had fun. I mean our parents did, because I was, you know, 12 years old at the time. But but this is what we need this today. We need this today. We need this today because of headlines like the Supreme Court saying to South Carolina legislators, you don't want, you know, black voters to have, you know, equal representation. That's okay. Here's what you do. You write up a gerrymandered map that is clearly racially gerrymandered, but because black voters have a tendency to vote Democratic because of Republicans doing horrible things like writing gerrymandered maps, we'll then say it's a partisan gerrymander, which we've all agreed we can't really do anything about, even though they could, but we say that we can't. That is basically the upshot of what happened in the Supreme Court yesterday, where they cleared the way, based on reporting by Adam Liptak at the New York Times, for South Carolina to keep using a congressional map that a lower court had deemed an unconstitutional racial gerrymander. The lower court said that the map resulted in, quote, the bleaching of African-American voters from a district. But the Supreme Court said to the lower court, no, leave the map that you said is racially gerrymandered back in. Of course, the vote was 6-3. The six right-wing justices voting yes on this to maintain the boundaries that have, made the districts the way that they are. The amazing thing about yesterday, well, there were several different things. One, of course, was that the opinion was written by far-right Justice Samuel Alito. You know, the guy with the pro-insurrection flags that flew both outside of his home and outside of his, you know, vacation home, wrote it. And basically, where he found fault in this case is with the people who brought the case and said, how dare you question the motives of Republican lawmakers who wrote this map? Specifically, he wrote this. When a federal court finds that race drove a legislature's districting decisions, it is declaring that the legislature engaged in offensive and demeaning conduct that bears uncomfortable resemblance to political apartheid, and we should not be quick to hurl such accusations at the political branches. Can you see the pearl clutching going on here? Like, my stars, you accused the people with racial motives of being racist. How could you do that? In dissent, Justice Elena Kagan was having none of this. She knew what was going on already. She recognized that this court, which as soon as three Trump-appointed justices got on, overturned Roe v. Wade, proving that they all had been lying to their confirmation hearings, except Alito. Alito was the only one who said in his confirmation hearings, yeah, I think Roe is wrong and we should get rid of it. And somehow he got on the court anyway. Anyway, Elena Kagan sees all this and accuses the six right-wing justices correctly of saying, I see what you're doing here. You're now going to bring up everything that had been said to be settled law in the past, but now that you have a partisan advantage, you're going to quickly take advantage of that party control to change all of these cases that had already been decided. Like the Wisconsin legislature did with its maps and with, you know, union worker bargaining rights and things like that. Kagan wrote, the proper response to this case is not to throw up novel roadblocks enabling South Carolina to continue dividing citizens along racial lines. It is to respect the plausible, no, the more than plausible findings of the district court that the state engaged in race-based districting, and to tell the state that it must redraw the challenge district, this time without targeting African-American citizens. If that were enough, it's not. There's more from a justice by the name of Clarence Thomas, who is the most irony-deficient human I may have ever known of in my lifetime. Clarence Thomas wrote a concurring opinion, but he wanted to do one on his own because he said if it were him, he would have gone further, getting out of the business of assessing claims of racial gerrymandering entirely. The court, Clarence Thomas wrote, has no power to decide these types of claims. Drawing political districts is a task for politicians, not federal judges. There are no judicially manageable standards for resolving claims about redistricting, and regardless, the Constitution commits those issues exclusively to the political branches. That is Clarence Thomas saying to the political side of the legislative branch, y'all do what you want. Do what you want. We, the courts, will not stop you. If you want to, bring back the poll tax, put in literacy, whatever hurdles you want to put in that come with drawing political districts, we're not going to touch it. Oh, if only that were enough. But there's more. Not only did Clarence Thomas say he would have gone farther, how much farther could he have gone? Clarence Thomas takes aim at Brown v. Board of Education, the case out of Topeka, Kansas in 1954 that ended racial segregation in the schools. Clarence Thomas faulted the Supreme Court of 1954 for taking, quote, a boundless view of equitable remedies through extravagant uses of judicial power to end racial segregation in the 50s and 60s. I have to say that again. Clarence Thomas said of Brown v. Board that the Supreme Court back then was taking a boundless view of equitable remedies through extravagant uses of judicial power, which sounds a lot like the anti-DEI diversity, equity, inclusion initiatives that we are seeing today, primarily from, you know, more along the lines of a lot of people who sure seem to give indications of, you know, outright or sympathy toward, you know, white supremacy in saying, you know, how dare you look for equitable remedies? If somebody wants to continue to suppress an entire class of people, you'll find no remedy here, says Clarence Thomas at the Supreme Court. You'll find no remedy here, say the Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature. And yet I continue hearing that there are voters sympathetic to these causes who are thinking of staying home this November because Joe Biden, word salad, word salad, word salad. Clarence Thomas just said Brown v. Board was an extravagant use of judicial power. And Sam Alito said, how dare you accuse anybody of racism ever? Don't come to the court with that. Tell me again how you're not going to vote in November. Actually, please don't. Don't. I need to get back on this yacht. Back after this. You're up north. Welcome back to Up North News Radio on this Friday morning. Kia Vakil, Courier Newsroom National Correspondent, is here. What's your big holiday weekend plan?
Good morning, Pat. I am well. My plans are to, I have some friends in town visiting, so I'm going to see them. I'm going to try to catch up on some sleep, maybe watch some soccer. Yeah, that's about it.
Well, what will we be watching for soccer? What are we following?
I am following the LAFC football game, and then also there's some games in Europe that I will be watching as well in England and Germany.
Okay, now I got to ask, who do you follow, and how did you come to pick them? Because I'd only be picking the team that Ted Lasso is on, and that's, you know, that's not a good way to pick your team.
Yeah, so the team I follow is Borussia Dortmund. They're not playing this weekend. They're in Germany, but I came to choose them. They just have a really vibrant fan culture. And so I, you know, started watching them and really looking into them and just appreciating them. You know, I know it in a weird way, it actually reminds me of the Packers fan culture. It's like a fan-owned team. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things that, you know, money is secondary to the sport and the culture, which, you know, isn't always the case in America. So that's what drew me in.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. And I will reciprocate with my soccer story. This goes back many years now that somebody pointed out that there was a club in the UK, you know, named for our younger daughter. And so I've got her a jersey for them once upon a time and said, yeah, we could follow them. And people were like, oh, you just picked them because they're like the best team, which, as you figured out by now, our daughter's name is Chelsea. And yeah. So, of course, I didn't know what a Premier League was. I just know it's a team named after my daughter. So, you know, they just happened to be good. And they were really good for a long, kind of like the Packers. I just kind of stumbled into these good teams. So it works out well for all of us. Let's go from sports into covering the news here. And there's a topic that we hit on this program regularly that I just don't think we hear about nearly enough elsewhere. And it's things that either the Biden administration or Congress can do, could do, should do to take on what appears to be increasing almost monopolistic power. We've talked about it in the agriculture sector. We've talked about it in healthcare, but also in terms of like the airlines. But we're going to hit two different ones here, the oil companies, but also entertainment. Let's start with Live Nation Ticketmaster. And what is the news this week about that?
Yeah, so the Justice Department on Thursday filed a lawsuit seeking to break up Live Nation, which is Ticketmaster's parent company, basically alleging it's a monopoly and they've hurt consumers and performers and ticket venues or concert venues and violated antitrust laws. You know, if you've ever tried to buy, you know, a concert ticket or a live event ticket, you know what a nightmare it is to deal with Ticketmaster and Live Nation, because they've become a behemoth over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years. And so they can charge all sorts of different fees, jack up prices. They basically have an exclusive on concert promotions at most major venues in the US. And they control roughly 80% or more of major concert venues ticketing. And so that's outrageous. You know, and so everyone pays the price there. Consumers pay the price, performers pay the price, promoters pay the price, venue operators pay a price. And so DOJ is suing to break them up. You know, and what we are seeing is that's very consistent with a, like you were saying, an effort to really rein in monopoly power that's exploded over the last 40 years. You know, if you remember your history lessons, 100 years ago, 130 years ago, we were going through very similar things in the early 20th century where monopolies were rampant. And that's why we passed the antitrust laws to rein them in. And then over the last 30, 40 years, those laws kind of got gutted and we had weak regulation. And every industry now, basically from airlines to entertainment to oil to, you know, grocery stores are monopolized. And so what the Biden administration is doing is slowly trying to reverse that trend. That will take years, maybe decades. But this is a huge start, and Ticketmaster is, you know, a pretty clear target. Yeah, and so that's what's happening this week.
So, what's the comeback on this? That you know, just free enterprise, capitalism, and kind of forget the lessons we've learned from the past. That, you know, free enterprise only gets you so far when a company gets to be a near monopoly. But I mean, that's kind of it, right? Is you can't tell us what to do. We're business.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll find some sort of really clever, cynical retort trying to argue that they're not a monopoly. But anyone with, you know, two eyes, two ears, and, you know, who's honest intellectually will tell you they're a monopoly. Like,
right.
You know, the same way at this point, you know, you could argue Apple is a monopoly or Google is a monopoly. It's these giant companies that basically wield insane power and give us no actual options on what to buy or what products to use. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the only real defense is we want to make more money, but they can't say that. So they have to come up with some clever legalese that may actually work in some court cases because there are judges who will buy into that. So, you know, it's not a guarantee this case will prevail, but it's a huge step just that they're filing this lawsuit.
And let me just say, as somebody old enough to remember the breakup of AT&T, mm-hmm. And this is not complete and total hyperbole when I say that if AT&T were still the company that it was, meaning the only phone company, yep. You would still have on your wall, you'd have mounted a black rotary dial telephone. Now, it wouldn't be quite to that point, but if you think it would, we'd have nearly the types of phones and features that you have with all these phone companies competing against one another. I mean, that's what you'd be looking for in these other marketplaces. And if you just keep that black rotary dial wall-mounted phone in mind, you understand what we need to be doing to get more competition in all these other fields.
Yeah. I mean, I think the people who actually say they support competition very often don't. That is right. Just a justification they use. But competition does actually lead to innovation. It leads to lower prices for consumers, leads to better products, and it leads to an actually fair economic landscape. And so we should all support that, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. Everyone should support more competition.
Meanwhile, you've got the oil industry, which you know, had its own thing, you know, over a century ago in terms of antitrust and breaking it up. But in my lifetime, we've had to put up with the stranglehold of the OPEC countries for a while. And now America is much less reliant upon the OPEC near monopoly. But we certainly have, we still have marketplace issues here as well.
So there was some bombshell, you know, allegations released by the Federal Trade Commission recently as part of their investigation or, you know, approval for a merger between, I believe it's Exxon and ExxonMobil, yeah, and Pioneer Natural Resources. Exxon is buying Pioneer. Pioneer is a Texas-based company, basically. And what the FTC found is that the CEO of that company, there is enormous evidence that he colluded with OPEC to reduce oil output and drive up prices in 2021. And that's, you know, famously the year where inflation started getting really, really bad. And so what this suggests is price fixing in the oil industry. And that could cost, you know, according to reporting by a reporter named Matt Stoller, who's an expert on, you know, monopoly and antitrust, between $500 and $1,000 a year to Americans. And that's, you know, we've all suspected that there might be something like this going on. If you've actually paid attention to the oil industry, this would not be shocking, but it is jarring to see the federal government say, yeah, this might be happening.
And if it is, I mean, if it's on such a level that it is essentially, you know, a criminal act, yep. You have people like Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan saying, mm-hmm. you know, why would we even rule out jail time if they're committing a crime against the American consumer?
And yeah, could be. No, and that's a really good point. You know, if there are a lot of people who believe in political conspiracies, and this is a very potentially an actual political conspiracy. And, you know, that's the reason people don't trust these big corporations. And in a lot of cases, don't trust the government, because sometimes there actually are these sorts of situations. Thankfully, this week, we did see some movement. We saw House Democrats on the Committee on Energy and Commerce send a letter to the CEOs of the big seven, the seven big oil companies. That includes ExxonMobil, Chevron, so forth. Basically asking for a lot of records and documents to try to investigate this. You know, it remains to be seen how far that actually goes, but it shows that there is, you know, some momentum in actually trying to, you know, at least among Democrats in the House, this handful, to actually hold these oil companies accountable or begin to try to investigate them. And that's the only way anything will ever change.
So when we talk about, you know, collusion, and we can talk about it at the corporate level. When you're talking about it at the geopolitical level, again, it goes somewhere beyond criminal. And I'm referring in this case to news that came through the former president of the United States himself, Donald Trump, saying that jailed American reporter Evan Gershkovitz of the Wall Street Journal will be released. But only if he, Trump, wins the election. I mean, it's like one of our own presidential candidates is blackmailing the voters. I'm still kind of stupefied that he actually put it in writing on social media.
Yeah, I wish I could say I was stupefied, but he is. Donald Trump is nothing if not. I don't even know what the right word is, but unpredictable.
Transactional. He's transactional.
Yeah, there we go. You know, he's basically, you know, and he says we'll pay nothing, but, you know, what he's basically doing is signaling to Putin, like, don't let him out. Let him out when I'm president, and maybe we can secretly negotiate something. And so even leaving that aside, it's appalling to say that, you know, oh, he can just suck it up for another 9 months or however long it is. No, he should be working to get Gershkovitz released now. This has shades of, you know, Reagan and Nixon.
I was going to mention both of those. Yep. Reagan with the Iran hostages, Nixon interfering with Johnson in Vietnam. Both of these things should have come to light earlier. Both of them should have absolutely been treated as crimes. And this one is right up there.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the same exact thing. The stakes might be slightly lower in that it's, you know, not an active conflict the U.S. is involved in. But directly involved in, I should say. But you know, it's this guy has been stuck there in prison for over a year for nothing. And so to make it political like this is gross.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't think it's criminal, at least you think it's gross. If you don't think it's either criminal or gross, well, then we have some real morality disagreements to talk about on this one. And then finally, just wanted to note, we've spoken at length about the PACT Act, the Burn Pit Law. Tammy Baldwin was a real champion of it. Ron Johnson was against it before he was for it. President Biden said this week that a million claims have come in so far to make sure that our veterans, you know, who served overseas are you know, going to get the healthcare options that they need rather than a stiff arm from either the Pentagon or insurance companies. So again, much like the Biden administration going after these monopolies, again, we're looking for at this advocacy at the at like the individual, the grassroots, the consumer, the veteran level that is, you know, much more service driven rather than power politics, Kia.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we veterans, our veterans healthcare system has a lot of issues. It's got a lot of problems that go back decades. And so, but the PACT Act is a big step. You know, it is helping people. Biden obviously has a very personal relationship with, you know, the military, given his son, Bo, who he suspects passed away from exposure to burn pits, which is what the PACT Act is targeting. You know, veterans who were exposed to it. This is really streamlining their ability to get care and get claims approved and to get the treatment they need. And that's a big deal. You know, it's not, you know, necessarily the noisiest thing in the world in terms of getting all the headlines, but it's a really important actual example of government working as it should.
And that's why I like bringing up these examples that show where government works when it's managed by the right people, people who actually have some decency and compassion. Kia Vakil, have a great holiday weekend. We'll talk to you again next week.
You too. Thank you, Pat.
Today's history lesson is next. You're up north. I don't remember the Bible reading quite this way, but it's close.
Makes it funkier.
It really does. If Bob Dylan could rewrite the rest of the Bible, I'd read it, you know?
Yeah, it's...
Where do you want this killing done? And God said out on Highway 61.
And then it was like, what's a highway? It's where you drive your car. What's a car?
Robert Allen Zimmerman, you know him as Bob Dylan, is 83 years old today from Hibbing, Minnesota, where Highway 61 is not that far away from. 83 today, and Tommy Chong is 86. So that's it. I'm done. I feel old enough for today. I'm ready to do something else now. Tommy Chong is 86. And I don't know how healthy he is, but he's alive. He's alive at 86.
Tommy Chong, he seems healthy. Like, he's doing shows. He's
doing commercials. Yes,
he has his own. He has his own line of fun adult smoking paraphernalias. Yes,
exactly. So, you know, good for him. So, Dr. Tommy Chong is 86 years old today. And you're saying, okay, fine. You started with Bob Dylan. That's great. And little Tommy Chong. I thought you were doing, you know, yacht rock. You know, where's the Michael McDonald? I'll tell you where Michael McDonald is. Backing up Patti LaBelle, who is 79 today. Well, I believe
in love. Now here I am. This is only sweeter because I'm almost done with Michael McDonald's book.
Oh, that's right. You're reading that.
Yep.
Oh,
man. No, I'm listening to it. He narrates it.
Of course, you're listening to it.
Ooh.
Patti LaBelle, 79. And there's so many good songs from her that we could play, but we had to do Michael McDonald.
Of course.
No question that we were doing on my own. couple of people who they were, shall we say, rock and roll royalty, both by marriage and of their own accord. Priscilla Presley, 79. Roseanne Cash, 69. On this day in 1967, rapper Heavy D was born. Now, if Heavy D had been his birth name, that would be quite a thing. Is maybe the obstetrician knew something we didn't. But he was born Dwight Arrington Myers.
Whoa.
Dwight Myers would later become Heavy D, born in Middlesex, Jamaica. And this one, when his big hit comes on, I'm still going to crank that up. So we should do the same right here.
I have a question. Just one question.
The question was originally asked by the OJs in 1973. And I like the OJs, but I did not know the OJs had done this song first. Went back and listened to it. And no, it's Heavy D's song now. You know, he made it his own.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend and I said, if Heavy D were still alive today, which was a tragedy when he passed away, I think he'd be on the lines of like a Snoop Dogg where he'd be hosting TV shows. America would just be like, he's the greatest human ever. He just seemed like a really nice human, a good guy.
Yeah, passed away at 24 in 2011 of a pulmonary embolism caused by a blood clot in the leg, most likely formed during an extended airplane ride between Jamaica and the UK. Stretch those legs out, kids. Do your exercises.
Get those compression socks.
Right. Let's see. On this day in 1935, the first night game in Major League Baseball history was played under the lights in Cincinnati, with the Reds beating the Phillies that night at Crosby Field. There was a number one hit by the Beatles this day in 1969. You know the song is Get Back. Do you know who's playing the keyboard? Give a listen. That, of course, would be Billy Preston on the keyboard, who really, had the group stayed around, could have, should have been the true fifth Beatle. They were digging on having him there.
Oh, yeah. They loved him.
On this date in 2006, the season 5 finale of American Idol, where Taylor Hicks was your winner, beating out Catherine McPhee, who would later go on to marry David Foster, right, who's now... 90 years old or something like that.
She married David Foster?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now I'm going to quickly go double check this, because if I get my, I don't want to get my old singers mixed up here.
We're in a check mode, mode.
Yep. David Foster. Yep.
Okay. He ruined Chicago.
He really ruined Chicago. Yeah. He is 74 years old today. She's 40, and I hear they're in love, and God bless them. For better or for worse, the number one song this day in 1997 was the debut single, we got to play it, folks, by Hanson. People are like, you stop mocking Hanson. I like them.
What I like is someone in the recording studio, the producer or some A&R, you know what the people love? They love the rap music and the record scratching. They're like, let's put a record scratch in there. Wiki, wiki, wiki.
All right, fine. We won't mock Hanson because we got the Spice Girls here. So on the same day, by the way, in 1997, the Spice Girls became the first British act to debut on the album chart at number one with their first album, and had the single.
So good.
Both daughters looking at the radio right now going, you know, Dad's dancing to this, because they made me. They made me dance to this a lot.
Oh, they made you.
They made me and I, I'm sorry, they made me and I went willingly.
They're calling you Pat Spice.
And hear from Tony. Tony just turned his radio on, turned on the stream, and boom, Hanson. I was not prepared for that. Sorry, Tony.
No one's ever prepared for Hanson.
Yes. Oh, this seems like a good time to take a pause before we do hour number two and then head into the holiday weekend on this, of course, National Road Trip Day for the Memorial Day weekend. It's National Don't Fry Day, which isn't about Friday and it isn't about grilling. It's a reminder throughout the summer here from the National Council on Skin Cancer Prevention to protect your skin as you head into the summer months. It's a National Asparagus Day, National Escargot Day, National Brothers Day, Brothers Got a Hug, Schizophrenia Day, Scavenger Hunt Day, and Tiara Day. So Greg is allowed to wear his through the news break, and then much more in our second hour. Jim Santel, Dan Schumacher, Mark Jacob, Brittany Merlot, and more here up north.